Success is setting out to accomplish something, whether it's accomplish marriage, whether it's accomplish parenthood, whether it's accomplish to be an NBA player. Success is to accomplish something.
Welcome to the Idea Generation Podcast, a show about creative entrepreneurship. My name is Noah Callahan Bever, and each week I'll be speaking with some of the most innovative ideators in culture and trying to figure out how they make their creative decisions. This podcast is brought to you by the good people at Shopify. Feeling that entrepreneurial itch? Turn your passion into a business with Shopify. They've got everything you need to start, run, or grow your business. Check out shopify.com/idea to learn more. Dwayne Wade knew that he was gifted at basketball the moment he started playing with kids his own age. However, it was experiencing the first championship run by the Chicago Bulls and seeing the impact on his community that inspired him to want to pursue the game professionally. Pushing himself to be his best, Wade worked tirelessly to show his coach and himself that he had the determination necessary to take his game to the next level.
How did your parents' professional life inform your career aspirations?
I don't know if the professional life did it. I think it's more so just the way we were raised did it. And not like, oh, I knew I was gonna be a basketball player when I was 5 or 6, but just I knew that like I wanted like different. I don't know, just as a small kid, just seeing like, you know, growing up in the inner city and growing up less than and not having a lot of things that you need and not just want, it just makes you like, as a kid, just make you say, okay, like I'm going to change this. Like I want to be the one to kind of help my family, you know, get out of this situation and rectify, you know, this. And so now my dad, he delivered like boxes. Like I don't want to diminish what he did, but yeah, he worked at a company who would deliver packages all around downtown Chicago. And I thought the job was amazing. I thought, you know, just seeing them get up every day and go to work towards something that inspired me. I didn't really know the difference between like what he was doing or really how much money it was bringing in. I just knew the community we were living in, how we were living. And so that inspired me more than what my father did professionally.
At what age did you become aware that you had an extraordinary gift? Was there a moment?
Yeah. Man, it kind of happened. Like, I knew throughout my life when I played sports, and my father always put me, like, if I was in fourth grade, I played with the sixth graders. My older brother was 2 years older than us, so he was in sixth grade. So we always played up. But when you play up and you're small, you never really, I wasn't good enough to, like, really to be better than them. And so it wasn't until I had to go down and play in high school, when I got to high school, and I had never played with my age group before. So once I got down, I realized, I was like, oh, wait, like I'm so much better than these guys. Like I just reading the game, like I was able to just like, I can read 2 passes ahead. Like it was just so much slower than the level that I'm used to playing at, because 2 years and at that age from 14 and 16 and, you know, that's a big jump, you know, in body. And so I was so used to playing with stronger, bigger, faster, more athletic, smarter players. And so around that time, I realized that I was like, okay, well, maybe I got a little something. And I just kept working it from there. So to go through a timeline, at 9 years old, I knew what I wanted to do. And that was because I grew up in Chicago. Right? I'm a Bulls fan. It's the greatest team in the world, the greatest player in the world, and Michael Jordan, and obviously so many others, Scotty and, you know, all the guys. And it wasn't just because of the basketball side of it. The reason I wanted to do it, the whole community, the whole city of Chicago, we all, for once, we felt like winners. And I just love that feeling. Like, I love that feeling of togetherness, of like, of celebration, of like, you know, my family feeling like we accomplished something. And I was like, that's the feeling that I want. And it came from my vision of watching basketball. And so I was like, that's what I want to do. And so at 9, the idea came, but it really didn't get like a real goal until I was 17 years old. That's when I was like, okay, like, what am I going to do? like college is coming. Like, you know, I knew things was happening in life. And I didn't really take school that serious. I was able to just walk in and get a C. So I was like, I'm cool. And at 17, I was like, okay, I want to go to NBA. Like, I really want to go to NBA. Let me now, like, put the work in to see if I can make it.
When you say put the work in, what does that mean at 17?
Like, in the summers, don't go hang with your friends. You don't get to do that. Like, if you want to get to that level, you can't do what everybody else is doing. And so that was around the time where I started doing what no one else was doing. Just to feel like I was separating myself. Like, all me and my guys, we all hooped together our whole lives. And it wasn't a big separation until, like, that summer. And that summer, I separated myself mentally. And then I just went to a different level, like, even around the neighborhood. I had a high school coach, assistant coach. I talk about him all the time. His name is Gary Adams. And Gary Adams came to me and asked me, do I want to be great? The summer before my junior season. And I was like, yeah, I want to be great. He said, do you know what it takes to be great? Obviously, I didn't know. He said, it's going to take you doing unconventional things, uncomfortable things, and putting a lot of work in. And so I said, all right, I'm in for it. And every day in the summer, he would come and pick me up, 8 o'clock in the morning. He told me I could never be late. If I was late one time, he would leave me, and he's never coming back to pick me up again. And I was only late one time, and I chased him down the block to get in the car. I called him at a light. But it just, that right there just started me on my path to understand how to be a professional. How to show up every day, how to show up on time. So that summer before my junior year was like the separation. And the moment where I was like, I really want to try to do this. So I grew up as my father's my basketball coach. So he's the one who taught me how to play the game. He put the ball in my hand and dribble with your left, dribble with your right, like, you know, all of that. And I was playing the game because that's what he wanted me to do. Right? Like, it was his love. It wasn't my love. And so I didn't become serious about it really until it became my love, you know? And so once I start falling in love with, this is what I want to do. Once I start falling in love with the actual work, that's when it was like, okay, you know what I mean? But it had to become from me, and it couldn't come from my dad, who, you know, my whole life was like, here, shoving the ball in my hand. And I was like, I was kind of fighting it. Even when I knew, like, oh, this is the feeling I want, I still was fighting it. Until I eventually just fell in love with it myself.
Did you, in your own head at least, have other options open that you were thinking, well, if this doesn't work out, then there are these other things? Or
yeah. I mean, I told my mom, like, you know, like, my mom would ask me, she'd say, baby, what else you going to be? I'm like, oh, I'll be a doctor. I wanted to be a hooper, Noah. Like, I wanted to be a hooper. It was no, like, it really wasn't no plan B. Like, just to be honest with you, I had no plan B. I didn't have, like, oh, if it don't work out, I want to be a coach. Or I wanted to be a hooper. I wanted to be an NBA player. I wanted to be great. And when I was 17 years old, they asked you in school, in your yearbook, and they say, in 20 years, what do you want to be in life? And at 17 years old, I said, in 20 years, I want to be retired from the game of basketball as one of the greatest to ever play. To spend time with my wife and kids at 17. And I retired 20 years later. It was one of the greatest ever play. Spend time with my wife and kids. It was right? Like, I put that vision out there, and 20 years later, that it actually came, without me even thinking about it, it actually came right back and happened the way that I wanted it to.
Wade would soon bring in a talented agent and eventually a business manager to help him navigate his radically changed life as a pro athlete. His team, the late Henry Thomas and Lisa Joseph, would prove to be a crucial support system helping him traverse the challenges of his new lifestyle.
How old were you when you started to realize that you had to manage not only yourself as an athlete and as a player, but also as a brand?
I probably was around 24. Between 24 and 25, I had just won a championship in my third year. So I was 24 years old. And the next season, I dislocated my shoulder. And that was the moment where everything changed for me, because I realized how quick the game could get taken away from me. Because when you're young, you don't feel like anything can stop you until you deal with injuries. You deal with things that may change the way you shoot forever, you know, the aggressive, how aggressive you play because of And so that was a moment where I remember calling my agent, rest in peace, Harry Thomas. And I remember getting on the phone with him, and I remember saying, hey, this is, like, what I'm doing now is not enough. Like, I want more. Like, I want to build a team. Like, I want, like, I need people around me to take my ideas and make them bigger and better. I knew that. And I started that process right there. I started building, like, what my future was going to be around 24, 25.
You know, a lot of people that I talk to for this show, their success grows gradually, right? And they start sort of, you know, with modest success, and then there's eventually a tipping point, and then things start to work out. Yeah. In your instance, overnight, you went from having almost nothing to having almost everything. What was that experience like?
So let me share a story with you. So as an athlete that you want to get drafted, you got to work your, like, I had to work my tail off, bro. I had to work my butt off to get drafted. Like, coming from where I come from, you know, having three scholarship offers, and academically ineligible going to Marquette, and all these things, right? All these roadblocks, all these things that's trying to stop me from getting to my path. And once I got drafted, that was like it. Like, this is it. This is what I worked my whole life for. And I remember after the press conference in Miami the next day, they put us up in the Mandarin Oriental. I had Zaire there. He was a baby. My ex-wife at the time, my sister Trigill, and my ex-wife's mom was there. And I remember being in that hotel at the Mandarin, looking off to, like, the water, right? And just taking it all in. Like, I'm a kid from in the city of Chicago, and now I'm in Miami, and it's like, this is a different world for me. And the whole family went to sleep, and I went back out on the balcony just to, like, have a moment to myself to be like, yo, like, go pinch myself. But in the middle of that, I realized at that moment that I worked my butt off to get drafted, and that was the easiest part of it. And that sounds crazy because you don't get drafted where I come from. But that was going to be the easiest part. Like, now the work actually starts. And I got scared. I got scared because I didn't have anybody to, like, I had nobody to call. Like, my dad wasn't in my life like that. My mom was, you know, in and out of prison around that time. And so I couldn't call anybody for advice or anybody to, you know, nobody can come and rub my head and tell me it's going to be all right. I was like, I'm the fifth pick in the draft. I just signed a deal for millions of dollars, which I don't even know what that means right now. And it's a lot going to be expected of me as a basketball player. I have a son. I'm a father. I have a wife. I'm 21 years old. Like, I don't. So I was scared. But the only thing I knew at that time was the only thing that got me there. And it was hard work. It was being professional. It was all these bullet points and these pillars that I learned with Gary Adams. And I just stuck to that. And I was like, well, I'm just going to do this. And so here we are.
Did you have a plan for the money?
First of all, growing up, my dad giving us like $5 for lunch. I'm trying to find ways to make money as a kid. Then my mom and I used to go and, like, we sell cans. So we'll go and pick all the cans up in the alleys and just go through Chicago and find cans, and we'll go sell them. And that's how we make our money, play a little lottery. I didn't know nothing about money. Like, even in school, like, you know, they didn't really teach you a lot about money. You know, they taught me how to, you know, balance a checkbook, but they didn't really teach you, you know, a lot. And so I get to college, and now I'm only getting like $220 a month. That's what we got from, you know, in our financial aid we got, but then we got $220 a month. And then I get drafted and I sign a deal for $10 million. What do I do with that? I don't know. I don't have nobody really in my life like that I trust. No one in my life has ever dealt with finances in front of me. We've never had a conversation about finances. So I really didn't know what to do with all this money. So I enjoyed it.
Thankfully, there's been more that's come after.
Yeah, this. Yeah, because I would have been in trouble.
How did you go about building a team around yourself to help create that support system?
Yeah, that was the hardest thing to do. And that's still the hardest thing for a lot of people, to find, you know, people around them that can, you know, make them better, right? It's like, you know, everyone has a role on teams. When you come out, they don't say, here's the best team. You know, here goes Beyonce's team. Here goes, you don't get that. And so you got to go and search and find it. And my agent was the first piece to that, Henry Thomas. And the second piece was Lisa Joseph. After my first year, I started getting, like, a lot of attention. And my agent was like, wait, this happened a little sooner than I thought. We need somebody with you here in Miami. And we didn't know what it was for. We just knew that I needed someone to be there to help me navigate through this world. And so we hired Lisa, and Lisa was the one who I kind of leaned on to help me kind of, like, even when I would go in meetings as a young, I didn't know how to speak up. I didn't know if my ideas was really right. And she was the one to kind of help pull that out of me and kind of gave me the confidence in those rooms. She was the one who would speak up for me at first until I got the confidence to say my own ideas and say what I don't like. And so started there, and it just started growing piece by piece from there.
What was it about Lisa that made you feel comfortable and confident that this person had your best interest at heart and would be able to really help you?
I met Lisa at a very tough time in her life. And Lisa's mother had just passed away. You know, Lisa was, I think she was 28 years old. She had just lost her mom. And God put you together for a reason. And like my life and my energy, my light, it was like kind of what she needed in her life. Like she needed that silly kid, you know what I mean, that adored her, but, you know, that wouldn't listen to her, that did listen to her or whatever. She needed that to kind of take her. She didn't have kids. She didn't have a husband. That's all she had was a family. And so I kind of came on the outside and I became family, but I was like this little brother, like somebody that, you know, she could like help, take care of, mold. And we just connected in a tough spot in her life. And I was going through a tough time at the same time, trying to navigate this life. So that's how we connected.
At 24 years old, Wade had an eye-opening experience when an injury forced him to contemplate life after pro sports. Preparing for the worst, Dwayne started to build a brand team around him that would help him synchronize his existing deals and look for new opportunities.
What was the process of bringing the brand of D-Wade into focus in your own head?
Like, I watched Michael Jordan, and so, okay, if Michael Jordan has Gatorade and Michael Jordan has Nike and, you know, all right, I need all those things, right? And then you get all those things and then you have to you have to deal with partners. You have to deal with the ask. You have to deal with all the things, right? And so, like, I didn't go into it like, oh, I want to build a brand. I really went into like, oh, I saw Michael Jordan doing this stuff. I wanted the Gatorade deal. I want a Nike deal. And then from there, as you start going through that and you start getting more deals, and then I got a T-Mobile deal and then I got Pepper's Farm deal, and I got all these things, and you're sitting there with like 7 or 8 different partnerships that's paying you a lot of money. You try to like, okay, like let's now put this all together. You know, how do we take everything that's pieced? How do we put it together and make what people call a brand? And so the only way that we knew to do that was to bring everybody together. And so we started doing brand summits, and I would bring all my partners in one room, and everybody would get a chance to know each other, to interact. I have some representatives from the Nike brand, from the Gatorade brand, from all the brands that I was the face of with my team, my CA team, my agent, Lisa. And so that's how we kind of built in a small room with my partners. And that was the first time I can look at it and say, this is a brand, because like we were all together and we were all trying to build something together. We were working with schedules together. We were working with, hey, if this is the colorway of the shoe going to come out, then this is what we're going to do. Like we started working together, and then it started feeling like a brand. And that right there was important for me, because I learned about these brands, and I learned about why they want me, why they need me, what they can do for me, what they can do for my community. Like all these things I was able to learn because I was able to ask questions. I was able to see inside the brand. And so that was the moment for me, Noah, that it was just like, okay, like now I'm building a brand.
When you think about this brand that you've built, what are the qualities or characteristics that you associate with it?
I mean, I try to associate authenticity to it. You know, I think early on I kind of did things that was, you know, kind of typical. I think now I associate it with everything I'm doing is just authentic. Like, I just want to be me. Like, I don't want to be anybody else but myself, and I want to do everything that's lifestyle drip. And so if I'm a part of it, it's just because it's what I do. It's not because it's paying me the most money or it's a need that I'm able to be a part of bringing to the world.
How far into your playing career did you start to become aware of retirement and that there was an end at some point?
So when I got that injury when I was 24, 25, I became aware that the game could end. Now, but I bounced back. And then when you're not as good, For me, I don't know if everybody would tell the truth. You know when you're not as good as you once was. The media don't have to tell you. The coaches don't have to tell you about not giving you play. You're like, you feel it. And I started feeling like, damn, I'm not as... I can't get there like I used to, right? And so that's when I started to be like, okay, how am I going to exit this game? You know what I mean? Like, I want to exit gracefully. Like, I feel like I'm a graceful person. Like, I want to exit gracefully. And I've watched some of my favorite players exit the game and not exit the way that they should, you know? And so I started trying to, like, plan it in my mind around, like, 2017. Okay. When I left Chicago and I went to Cleveland, that's when I knew it was coming close, because I was now hopping around. Left Miami after 13. I went to Chicago. I did that. Now I'm in Cleveland. I'm like, okay, I know how this... I've seen this movie before. Yeah. This movie ends with you out the NBA at some point, right? Some young guy is going to eventually, you know, as you're getting older. And so I started, like, planning, like, what my exit could be. And I knew that no matter what, I wanted to end it in Miami. I just didn't know how I was going to get back there to be able to do that.
Interesting. Well, especially at that point, it was a pretty cantankerous relationship.
Yeah, that's why I didn't know I was going to get back. You know what I mean? But I was like, with some way, even if it's a one-dayer, like, some way, somehow, I need to go off and take my head off and wave it to the heat. You know what I mean? Like, I need to do it in Miami. That's the way I want to go out. And so I didn't know how it was all going to come together. Like, even the One Last Dance came together just so organically. Like, I literally didn't know if I was going to come back and play that year. I met with everybody. And I just told Bob, like, just set up a camera in a dark room. Just let me go talk. And whatever comes out is what we're doing. Like, that's how I decided that this was. And it came up with One Last Dance just by saying it. And so I've always been not a visionary, but I've always been someone who tried to, you know, and just open my mind and, like, take time. Like I said, think in environments that allows me to bring out the best thoughts and put a plan together and approach it.
To go from being one of the best people that have ever done a thing and then be venturing into sort of the unknown, was that frightening?
Yes. Yes. And I'm walking out as someone who walk out, like, they let me out the doors in the NBA with 3 NBA championships, with brand deals, and it still was scary. And so think about someone who gets, you know, let out the door after 2 years or 3 years, or do not have those achievements, in a sense, because you walk out with your achievements that it means something, right? But I just continue to, once again, it's like, okay, I don't know what to do really. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go back to the basics, because this is what got me where I am. So the basics is this, okay? Where your weaknesses are? Where are your weaknesses at? Okay? What is the possible job opportunities in this space? Okay? So work on your weaknesses. So if these job opportunities come, you're ready for them. And so I knew that I had an opportunity to be on TV. People told me my whole career, oh, you may be on TV. I think you got a good personality. So I was like, okay. Well, first thing I did after I went to therapy is I went and hired me a vocal coach. Right? I wanted somebody to help me be able to present the right way, to be able to pronounce the right way, and feel more confident, you know, if TV was going to be my future. And so I put in the work. And so that's all I knew.
Wanting to build a business outside of basketball, Wade decided to go straight to one of the NBA's most accomplished players off the court, Magic Johnson. From Starbucks to the Los Angeles Dodgers, Johnson seemed to have his hand in every kind of business venture, and he gave Wade the game he needed to create his own path. Emboldened by that conversation, Wade rolled the dice by teaming up with an unlikely partner to reimagine his footwear brand.
Did you have any mentor in business at that time?
So my mentor in business was Magic Johnson. I knew that, like, I was like, well, I want to be like MJ in basketball. I want to be like Magic off. So I decided to do that, to use my resources. And my mom is actually very close to Magic's mom. They got very close through the church. And I told my mom this. And so my mom reached out to Christine Johnson. Christine reached out to Magic and said, call your little brother. And I want you to meet with him. And he did. I flew out to L.A. 2 summers in a row, sat down, met with him, talked to him, asked questions. And that right there started my process to thinking outside the box, to thinking that none of my ideas are stupid, you know, to utilizing my team in the right way. Magic, you know, he pointed out that he felt that I had one of the best teams, and it was small at that time, but he felt that I had the like good people around me that believed in me and that can get the job done. But they needed direction from me. There's no way I was going to be able to build what I wanted if the direction didn't come from me, if the ideas didn't come from me. And so I started sitting on planes, having quiet time, and just coming up with ideas of things I wanted to see and things I possibly wanted to be a part of.
What were the questions that you asked him at first?
How did you get so rich after basketball? I'm young. I'm like 25, 26. I'm like, he didn't make his money in basketball. Like, he made his wealth. He's built his wealth away from the game. And so I just asked him, how did you do it? Like, what ways did you do it? And a lot of the conversation, it was some that I was uncomfortable with, was relationships. You know, I never really want to build a relationship to feel like I'm trying to get something from someone or I need something from someone. And so, you know, it was just like basic questions. It was, you know, Magic got into Starbucks early, right? I'm like, Magic, how did you get into Starbucks? You know what I mean? Like, how did that happen? So just asking those questions and him giving me the answers back. And I just took notes of, you know what I mean, of how you needed to be. You know, one thing we know about Magic is, you know, we always see the guy with a smile on his face, right? When he walks, you know, whenever he's in the room, whenever he's on TV, you feel his light, you feel his life. And, you know, he kind of released me, just like Shaq did as well. Them was the two most important people in my business journey, Shaq and Magic. It kind of released me to be me. Like, to paint my nails if I want to. Like, they, in a sense, like, they kind of was like, yo, you have to be, like, it has to be, like, organic. It has to just be you. Like, don't make someone put on you what you don't want, like, type. And so, like, they released me a little bit. And these coming from guys I respect, guys who are stars in their own right. But, yeah, I just ask questions, man. All of them. So one of the tricks as a leader is to find, like, if I have an idea, one of the tricks is to find out who can take this idea and formulate it, right? Because it's just, to me, this is just an unfinished idea, right? And I'm going to throw it out there. And who on my team needs to hear this so they can formulate it the right way and pass it to the next, like, you know? And so as a leader, it's my job to take puzzle pieces and put them together, right? And understand, you know, where they go. And sometimes I may put the wrong piece. You know, sometimes you put a puzzle together, you put the wrong piece in just because you've been lazy. Sometimes you may put the wrong piece in the puzzle, then eventually, you know, to get the puzzle right, you got to take that piece out and put the right one in. And so for me, it's always been about these puzzle pieces and finding out, how do I take an idea and where does it go to get to the place that it needs to, you know, become something.
What do you think the key is to being a good manager?
I think it's a lot of things. I think is understanding each individual that's on your team, like getting to know them. Get to know the likes and dislikes. As a leader, I always talk about you have to know when to lead, and you have to know when to follow. And so on my team, I do a lot of leading, but I do a lot of following. It's in times where I have to listen. I have to, someone else come up with an idea that I'm, you know, it's whatever the case may be, right? So I just know, like, just by playing team sports, I know that I've played so many different roles. Like, I've been a bench guy that's been like, yay, here go your towel and your water. I've been a star. I've been a second guy. I've been so many different things. And so I know to have success in team that it's about sacrifice. That's about playing your role. It's about starting your role. And so I know sometimes my role is to lead and hear my voice. And sometimes my role is to support. And, you know, that's just kind of how we roll.
In 2009, you signed with Brand Jordan, which I think for many athletes is kind of the pinnacle.
Yeah, that was.
That's the dream.
Yeah.
In 2012, as you are peaking in your career, you made a very sort of unorthodox, unusual move in signing with Li Ning.
Yeah.
What motivated you and how did that play out in your head?
Michael Jordan motivated me to do it because he had his own brand. And I was associated with his brand and I felt like, this is awesome. I'm getting all the retro Jordans. I'm like, you know, my boxes, my shipments are, but this ain't. Where does this go for me? Like, I started thinking about at some point my career ends, this contract ends, this money ends, this relationship ends, because I've seen it. Or it just becomes a merch deal or whatever, right? And I was 30 years old, And that was in a career of an athlete, that's a very pivotal time at 30, especially in the NBA. Before, like, we're seeing LeBron now at 37, guys weren't doing that. And so how deals go around 33 is athletes, your money go down, everything goes that way. And so I'm sitting here at 30, still good, champion, just come off a championship. And I got a big decision to make. Do I re-sign with Nike? Do I re-sign with Jordan? Make good money for the next 3 years? Because at 33, at the Nike, they don't offer you, like, not too many guys going to get a deal past 33 that's going to be as lucrative. And so I just sat back and I thought about Jordan. I thought about what he built, thought about the blueprint that was laid. And I said, okay. You know, once I got the deals coming in from Li Ning and Anta and all these places that was reaching out, I was like, I'm going to take a chance on myself. I'm going to see if I can build my version of Jordan Brand. Once again, I want to be like my favorite player. And if I fall short, it's still going to be great. And so it was a guaranteed risk. I had signed a 7-year deal that gave me a lot of millions of dollars. But for me, it was about the future. It was about I eventually signed a lifetime deal. It was about that. It was about, you know, this word legacy. It was about building something, you know, that other NBA players and other guys can be a part of and take chances on. And at 30, I just made that decision. It was a tough decision at first to make it, to leave Jordan Brand and, like, to leave the coolness and go somewhere where no one was going to rock my shoes, no one was going to know I had shoes in the States and all these things. But I wanted to build something that was bigger than me. And I took a chance.
Was there a moment or a catalyst that opened your eyes to the value of being a global brand?
Yeah, my team. You know, like, we sat down and, like being in meetings with Mr. Li Ning and someone else got to translate the whole conversation, that's different. Like, I had never been in this situation before. And so I'm sitting here and I'm like, this is big. Like, I know this is big. Like, I knew around that time, I knew what basketball meant in China. Like, I knew that they had as many registered basketball players as we had human beings on Earth here. And so I knew that basketball was huge. And I knew if Mr. Li Ning was sitting across from me and this was important. And so I, you know, it's just really trying to see past the moment now and trying to see, like, the future, if you can, right? And so for me, I just knew it was just a big opportunity. And I knew that if I was going to have longevity in apparel and sneakers and all that, I had to go take a chance and do something different and go build something in China where I already had a good fan base. The 2008 Olympics was in China. You know, I played pretty well on that gold medal team.
Was that experience in sort of informative in terms of your thinking about this?
Yeah, but not really thinking about it at the time, okay. Right? Like, Kobe Bryant was the biggest thing over there. And Kobe had started going to China maybe, I don't know the exact, but maybe let's say, you know, 2-3 years before the Olympics. Started going over there and really embedding himself into the culture of China. And I seen how huge he was and how he was, being over there, you get to really see how huge the game is. And so my fan base grew because of my play through the gold medal, being on the Heat, one of the most watched teams, all this thing. And so I knew I had a fan base. I knew I had a brand. I just knew it was going to take a lot of work to build, because I was at Converse before for 6 years trying to help build that. And that ended up, the basketball division ended up closing down. And so I was like, okay, I'm doing it. I'm trying it again. And so it was a risk.
What kind of work does one have to put in to establish themselves in such a big but also distant market?
Well, it's so hard to spend a lot of time there, right? Thing about China is they want to know that you care about their culture. They want to know that you're not just there to make a quick buck. And so I had to go in and really try to learn about the culture and learn about the people. And like I said, that's my strength, though, because my people skills came in. But really just embedding myself into the culture, really going out, man, the first couple of years, really just going and traveling around for 2 weeks and just going to all the smallest cities and all the places and showing up and being there and, you know, speaking and camps and just all these things, just really embedding myself in that community. And that was something that I seen from Kobe that was important. And so it was, all right, we got to put groundwork in. We got to put the work in now for hopefully when you retire, you know, this relationship can further.
When you look back now, a decade later, do you feel like that decision, aside from being very lucrative, has been transformative for your brand?
most important business decision that I made to date was signing with Lenine. It just, it opened up everyone on the outside eyes to global, to something bigger. It put me in a different space, right? It separated me in a sense. But I learned so much about business. I learned so much about to communicate with another country, to try to have a successful business when they do it totally different than you would do it. That's hard. But to be able to come to common ground, like, it's a, you know, it's just a lot of work to be able to do it. And so for me, that one move, once I was not afraid to make it, now I'm not afraid to make any move. That move right now, I may be a little like, okay, do I want to do this right now? But that move was probably the scariest business move that I had to make. And after I made that one, I was like, oh, I'm making more. Like, I want more hard, hard decisions like this. And so it kind of started it off for me.
Although he knew little to nothing about the wine business, Wade knew his interest in the product was authentic. Along with his ever-present desire to give back to the community, Wade leaned into the idea of creating accessibility to the culture of wine to help bridge the gap for those not traditionally involved in the scene.
Wine is a connector. If I'm going up to an event and I don't know nobody, and it's a wine event, I get a glass of wine. When you have a glass of wine in your hand and there's people around, it becomes that kind of energy. It becomes a community, like a talking thing. It becomes a get to know you kind of thing, right? Because even if I don't know you, because we got this glass of wine in our hand, we share a common interest, right? Just like sport. That's why, like, people anywhere around the world, it's a lot of things going on around the world, but we can all come together for a team that we all support and that we love, or a player, right? It's a connector. And so wine became a connector for me. And I was like, once again, I like connecting with people. This is the rooms. This is the places that I want to go and I want to be in. It wasn't about the dollar. I didn't know anything about the business. You know, I just knew that I wanted to build something for the future that excited me. I was excited to get into an industry that wasn't accessible to my community, right? Like, this is not accessible like that in the city. And so I wanted to be one of the guys that can help bring it and make it accessible so people can learn about it and understand more about this industry. Once again, it goes back to try to touch anything that seems, you know, that's deemed untouchable. And that the wine industry at that time, it felt untouchable.
So how did you go about selecting partners and educating yourself? It's one thing to enjoy wine. It's another thing to build, you know, a business around it.
I relied on my team. You know, once the idea came, and it actually, someone presented me with this idea on set of my first Lenine commercial. Yeah, on set of my first Lenine commercial that we were shooting here in the States. A friend of a friend asked for a few moments. Hey, can I get a few moments with you? I was like, all right. And this was somebody who was in the liquor space. And he presented me with, hey, I think you would be amazing in the wine space. And that, mind you, around that time, I just started drinking wine about 2 years, 3 years before. So I'm very young in this space. But immediately I knew what he meant. Like, I felt it as well when he said it. And so I took that idea and I sent it to Lisa. And I said, Lisa, I think I want to do this. And she was like, boy, you don't even drink like that. And I was like, I know, but like, I want to get more into it. I'm getting older. And this is for when I retire. That's kind of how I did it. And then she took it to CEA. Like, the whole team got on it. Everybody got on it. Just like when I said I wanted to have my own socks, everybody got on it, right? And I just have an amazing team, an amazing group, and that we put in a think tank. We all go in that think tank and we try to see, you know, how to best, you know, utilize my talents or my time or whatever. And so that's what we did. And then we just set out to go out and reach out to families in Napa to see, you know, who was interested in this kind of like partnership. Napa was only, you know, was where the relationship with a guy that introduced me or that brought the idea to me. He had relationships in Napa. So had a couple wine dinners, try to see if there was any chemistry between some of the families out there. And the Paul Meyer family, which, you know, who makes my wine, we had a dinner together in L.A. here. And we just connected. Like, we just vibed. And I was like, I don't know nothing. I don't know a lot about wine, but I know I like these guys. And, you know, and so I want to do a project with them. And so that's kind of how we started off. Like, let's do a project together. Let's do one wine. Let's see how it goes. And that's how we started, 2012 Cabernet.
It's crazy. And you're now 8 years into the business. where do you feel like it is in its maturity?
Oh, we like babies. Like, I feel like even when I hear 8 years, I'm like, wow, that is a long time. But like, I feel like we're like diapers. Like, we're still in diapers. Like, we're going to bed in diapers. That's when you know you. So we have a long way to go. And for me, this is, you know, this is something that I enjoy being a part of, right? Like, it's a lot of acts for me to do a lot of things. But when it comes to wine, I'd be like, all right, I'll do it. So I feel like we got a long way to go. We got a long way to go to build out what it is, the vision was, right? To really make it accessible. You know, and we're getting to that point now where people are starting to understand what our brand is about. They're getting a chance to obviously taste the wines. And they're getting a chance to hear the story in the background. And so people are starting to fall in love a little bit with our brand. And so we're at the very early stages of building what this future in this space looks like.
Entering into an unfamiliar marketplace, Wade made sure that he and his team had the right partnership in place with the Pallmeyers. He also weighed the pros and cons of utilizing his name and likeness with the brand, ultimately deferring to his team's best judgment.
You feel like you've learned a ton about the chemistry and just like the nuts and bolts of how this stuff comes together?
Yeah, I try not to like nerd out about it because it's so much to learn in this. It's so much to learn in wine, but I just try to keep it all based on, once again, I keep it all based on my experiences, my life experiences, and like the questions I ask and what I drink and where I go and, you know, what am I getting from it? Like, I didn't go to school for it, so I try not to act like, you know, that, like I'm a Psalm. Like, yeah, I'm not a Psalm. Like, I try not to act that way, right?
Do you feel like the line has changed or evolved as you've sort of experienced new things and like...
Yeah. So, like, when I first got into it in 2014, 2012 was our first vintage. And so what I did is they asked where my palate was at the time. And I was, like, really into, like, Cabernets, just personally. And so that's what we started at. That's the grapes that we pulled, and that's what we started at. And so I was able to pick the grapes and, like, you know what I'm saying? And then, obviously, like, a year or so later, be able to taste my wine. So yeah, man, it's been a cool process. It's been a cool growth, like from the beginning to now. Like I said, like now, you know, taking wine tours, going to different places now outside of Napa. I'm going to France. I'm going to see like how they make wine different now around the world. And what that allows me to do is it allows me to appreciate the process, and it allows me to enjoy wine that I normally don't enjoy. Because here's the thing, like we all don't like every glass of wine that we get, right? There you go, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Cheers. So you get a chance to appreciate the wine in a different way. So like what I like to say now when it's a wine that I've never tasted or something that I may not like love right away is I just say like my palate hasn't grown to that yet. You know what I mean? And so like just understanding like just all the parts that go into it, and it's not just the mechanics of it. It's really like it's a lot of hard work and a lot of like, you know, going over there and watching the families and how they take care of the wines and like, you know, and just the whole process, man. It's just... It makes you appreciate it a little bit more.
One thing I was wondering, you know, it's Wade Cellars, but you have other brands that you have that don't have your name associated with it. How do you decide when is the right time to utilize?
That's a big conversation. Like, I wanted to take my name off this wine plenty of times. And the reason I did that, because everyone don't like Dwayne Wade. I don't care how cool I think I am. And so I didn't want people to be turned away by the name. I wanted you to really get the chance to experience the wine and then get a chance to really, now once you experience the wine, now try to find more information about the story. And then the story leads you to who wine it is, right? Mm-hmm. This right here just automatically tell you whose it is. And so it's a stigma that comes with an athlete or a celebrity endorsing certain things, especially in an industry that y'all know I didn't go to school for and I didn't spend a lot of time on. And so... I wanted to take my name off of it, but you know, my team felt it was good that I keep it on. And so I go through that in a lot of brands, and I try to, you know, see like when it comes to apparel and sneakers and stuff. Yeah, of course, Wade. You know, that's something that, you know, kids know you by. But this is a different world, and so it was hard for me to keep my name on this bottle, but I'm still doing it right now.
Do you feel like your relationship with the wine industry has changed now that you're 8 years in and you've showed like a real sort of, you know, investment?
That's what it is. The fact that they see you showing an investment, like you showing up And once again, Noah, you know, like I show up, I ask questions. And like I'm engaged and I want to know. Like when I went to France this summer, I have so much respect for them. You know, a lot of people call it the best, you know, winemaking region in the world. And I can't argue that, but I just wanted to know. So I was just going to winemakers and I'm just asking all the questions in the world. But then it's also to a correlation in life. Like wine is just, you can take the same process and something else and bring it to this industry and you can understand it. Like as someone who played basketball and was very meticulous to the game, I can understand what goes into the process of wine. Just like I can sit and understand the, you know, how meticulous you got to be to make a watch, right? And so I understand it now because I ask questions, I listen. It's how I make it work for myself.
Have you ever had a big idea but lacked the tools to implement it? Look no further than Shopify. Shopify is the brand that powers all your favorite clothing, beauty, and sneaker brands and offers the best-in-class commerce tools to allow you to sell online, in person, and on all major social platforms. Shopify fuels millions of entrepreneurs and turns ambition into action. Check out shopify.com/idea to learn more. Now back to the story.
You've recently become an owner in the league as well. And so, you know, I'm curious because I know that you've had a contentious relationship, particularly with the Heat, you know, towards the end of that first run there. Has being on the other side changed your feelings about that interaction or generally your feelings about the sort of relationship between players and the owners?
Yes and no. Yes, because you get a chance to be on the other side and you get a chance to really learn. Like when you play, you just know that side. You know, the player side, when you star, you ask for, you know, better players, you ask for whatever, you just want it. You don't even care how they got to do it, you just want it. When you get on the other side, you get to see how much money you got to play with. You get to see from year to year what, you know, what you can do and what you can't do. All those things. So I definitely have a better understanding of what, you know, could have been done and what should have been done. But you know, I'm a firm believer that you have work. Like when you have a job and you're doing that job, that's work. But you also have personal. It's personal in the work. It's some people who are personal in the work. I felt that our relationship was personal in the work of me being a basketball player. And so, no, like I still don't like the way I was handled. And it's just a way that you handle when it's personal. And it didn't feel personal. It felt like work. It felt like I was just another athlete.
And as an owner, do you try to keep that in mind as you guys negotiate with different players and, you know, manage those relationships?
Well, the good thing about it is I'm not really in that. I'm a small percentage, you know, owner. So I don't have to be in those rooms. No, but what I do is I do keep that in mind when I'm talking to Ryan, when I'm talking to management. But at the same time, you know, it's a cutthroat business and it sucks. As much as you want to bring everybody into the office and tell them everything, some players don't want to hear it. That's the one thing I'm seeing on this side as well. You think the players want to hear everything. They don't. Like, I thought they did. I'm like, yo, I'm going to be on the other side and I'm going to tell them, I'm going to keep it real. They don't want you to keep it real. Some players just want to know what they want to know. And so you got to kind of know the player. It's about the player and where they at in their life. Are they 22 or 23? They may not. They just care about hooping, right? Or maybe they 34, 35. Now they're seeing the income. Now they care about. So you just got to kind of know the player. And I'm not in those rooms making all those decisions. But when my number is called and when I'm asked, you know, I'm going to be real and I'm going to tell them how I feel that, you know, players, it should be more of a partnership. And it's not, you know, right? From ownership to player. It should be more of a partnership. And it's a fine line, though, from like going out with guys and going out to dinner with guys and trading guys. Right? And so it's tougher than you think when you're a player. But it's also a way that you can do certain things when it's really a personal relationship and not just a player who you sign to do a job. When you really get personal with somebody, it becomes different then. And I think that's when you handle it a lot different.
A year into being an owner, aside from winning more games and winning more championships, what are the changes that you are hoping to affect for your legacy to feel like it was important that I contributed?
it's been important for me away from being inside the jazz arena that when I've had the microphone, I've had time to speak about the world moving forward and evolving in the way the mindsets, right? Like I have a 14-year-old transgender daughter at home. It's time to move the conversation forward. It's time to push it forward. And so it's been important for me to get the microphone in the community and talk about this. You know, I'm new coming in and I don't know a lot about the history of their faith, only what I've researched. But, you know, because I'm there for a reason, you know, and I don't know. I don't want to just be a shiny toy that's brought out to wave to the crowd. I want to, you know, be able to affect real change and start real conversations. And on the ownership side, from a basketball standpoint, I know I'm a winner. Like, I know I've been a part of winning in a sense. And so I want them to understand to win a championship on the court, you have to build a winning organization. You have to build a championship organization first. And it starts at the top, right? And it goes all the way to every department, you know, how people are treated, all the way before you even get to the players. And so it's our job to build a championship organization that the players can be proud of and a part of and want to be associated with. Then we get to the court part, which is the hardest part. And so that's a part of the goal for me.
Helping communities, overcoming obstacles, and building brands are no easy feat. But for Dwayne Wade, as they say, impossible takes a week. So when Wade and wife Gabrielle Union welcomed their daughter Kavya to the world, only to discover a lack of baby care products engineered for her skin and hair type, Wade saw yet another challenge to overcome.
You and your wife have recently co-founded a new company, Proudly. Does baby goods and supplies and stuff. Yeah. How is working with family like?
Yeah. Working with family is never the best idea. Working with your wife, yeah. It has its ups, it has its positives, and then it has its challenges. But I think in this company for us, we're both, the name of it is Proudly, and we're both proud of it because, you know, great ideas come from needs, right? Like it was a need. It's a need in our life. It's a need in the world.
And this came from you guys recently having a child and just seeing that there was a...
Yeah, like going out and trying to find all the products and everything we need for our child, right? And knowing that our child have different needs than what we're seeing on the shelves. Like our skins are different, you know? And so it was like, man, it's really a need out here. We're buying, we got 30 different products in here to try to make a few. And so it came out of a need. And then to be able to be in a position where both of us decided that we wanted to, you know, take it to our team and say, this is what we want to do together, been our first business together. It's good because it's like a family business. You know, it started from my daughter. And so it's a good part of it. But for me, it's just, like I said, it just goes back to like when you have the opportunity to be able to be able to do something like that, to be able to create something that's a need in the world and to be able to expand it or make it better. Like tech, that's what tech is. It's finding something that's already and just making it better. If you have the opportunity to do that, then it's your job to do that, right? To move things forward.
How would you describe the difference between how you and Gab approach business and brand?
Gab is a little bit more like own it. She own everybody. I'm a little bit more lax when it comes to the imperfectness of human beings. Like I let things slide a little bit more than Gab. My wife is on it. I don't really like I understand that mistakes will be made. I understand that it's imperfectness in all human beings. I also understand as a leader, like I said, that, you know, if you got good people around you, they just may be misplaced. It's your job to put them in the right place. And so like my wife is like, if somebody mess up though, quick. So, you know, we just got a little ways. Like, after we get off a call or something, I kind of be like, hey, you know, maybe you should think about it this way. Maybe you should approach it this way. It's a little aggressive. And so we do have our, you know, it's like I guess I would say it would be like a good cop, bad cop in a sense. Like my wife is more bad cop than I'm. in the midst of that, I think what we do share is I want to not have all the cake. Like, we want to share the cake. We want to enjoy the party with other people. And we both share that. And so that right there is, you know, one of the greatest things that in business that we can both have because we're not selfish to trying to take it all from each other or, you know, from anyone else.
As your kids emerge as their own individuals and their own professionals and their own brands. How involved are you in coaching them through that? What kind of wisdom do you impart?
I'm very involved until they get to the point where they're ready to take it themselves. And I'll be gladly. You know, Zaire is 20. He's kind of at that point where he's now, you know, he's taking his kind of his brand and his want for to be successful and all this. He's taking on his own shoulders in a sense. And so, you know, my job is to advise and to make him aware of his resources. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need to be the one. I just need you to be aware of your blessings and your gifts. And your gifts are these resources around you. So tap into them. I try to go in it from, like, life. Like, I teach my kids through life experiences. I don't teach them through what a book tells me how to raise my kids. I teach them through what my life experiences are and what others' life experiences are, and try to understand their life experiences because they're different, right? It's kind of easy for us to work together when it comes to this space. Like, what do you want to do? Is this something you want to do? Because if it's what you want to do, then, you know, you have to put the work to do it and to be, you know, the best at it or whatever the case may be. Like, what are your goals in this? Like, I ask questions like that, and then I allow them to go off and try the things and do the things they want to do. And I try not to hold them back. I try not to be in a way, and I try not to put my fears on them. And I try not to put my hope in them. You know what I mean? Like, some parents put their hope in their kids. Yeah. And then some parents put their fears on their kids. And I try my hardest not to do that.
You mentioned earlier at 17, putting in your yearbook, where you wanted to be at 37 and achieving it almost to a T. If you had to write down where you want to be in 20 years from now.
You know, it's crazy because I'm still in the process of figuring it out. And the first thing that come to mind is I lived the first 20 years of my life as this poor kid, right? Like, from 0 to 20, it was rough. Like, life was rough. But then the next 20 years of my life, from 21 to 40, I've been like this rich, famous person. Like, you know? And so the next 20 years, man, I want to be wealthy and I want to be remembered. You know? Like, I want to live the same. I don't want to live this for the next 20 years. I don't want to be just rich and I don't want to be famous, because famous is not what it's all cracked up to be. I just want to be remembered for the things that I've been able to do and accomplish. Hopefully the people I've been able to help and change their lives, and just living life and enjoying it, being healthy, golfing.
When I think about entrepreneurship, for me, it's incredibly frightening. It's like a roller coaster. Every day I have, you know, moments where I feel like I can defeat anything, and then one bad thing happens and I feel like the whole world is going to fall apart. Yeah. And then 5 minutes later, something good happens and I feel all right. Obviously, given the level of success you've enjoyed leading up to this, as you do these business endeavors, it sort of mitigates the stakes, right? It's not, if one thing goes south, it's not the end of the world. But the flip side of that is that you have a certain reputation and a certain, you know, aura that is associated with you and largely related to not losing. Do you feel that pressure as you sort of make these moves into spaces where you don't have that foundation?
No, because I know, like, I lost a lot. You know what I mean? Like, I only won. I mean, I won in life, like, you know, but like, even in the NBA sense, I won 3 years. I lost 13. Like, I went home 13 summers. Like, this sucks. So I understand that the reason I got those 3 wins is because of those 13 summers. And so, as much as we want everything to be, every deal to go perfect, and everything to be smooth, we don't really want that because we're not going to learn nothing from that. And so I'm a person who likes to learn. And so I brace myself for the losses and, you know, things like that. But I get it. When they come, now it's like I feel alive because now I got something to shoot for. I got something to work for. And that's why I'm here, right? Because I have something to work for. I have something to shoot for. I have something to dream for. And so that's who I am. So I don't mind a loss. I just don't want too many of them in a row. But I'm not like one of those. I'm not a stock watcher. I'm not an investment watcher. I did it. I'm doing it. What's next?
Dwayne Wade's story, both as an athlete and entrepreneur, is one of focus and perseverance. From the day he was born, nothing was handed to Wade. Sure, the Chicago native possesses some extraordinary physical gifts, but nothing would have come from them if it wasn't for his tenacity and overwhelming sense of purpose. He put in the work to be exactly as good as he was at basketball. And he multitasked while he did it, building his name into a global brand when he wasn't busy winning championships. And when that chapter ended, he moved on to his life as an entrepreneur, animated by the same conviction and discipline that he had shooting in the gym at 17 years old. Not everyone, and honestly, almost not anyone, may share the natural ability that he has on the court, but that is not what makes D-Wade D-Wade. It's his commitment to constant elevation, and that is something that we can all aspire towards. Thanks for checking out this week's episode of Idea Generation. Big thanks to our sponsors at Shopify. If you're looking to start your own online store, check out shopify.com/ideas and become your own boss today.